You're no messiah. You're a movie of the week.
Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Take 127 on Ship Full of Bombs, S-F-O-B. Shall I try again?
Yeah, have another run at that, Dan.
S-F-O-B.co.uk. Hello, everybody.
I'm Dan.
What's dot-uk?
I'm Dan Leonard. I'm hosting and ably assisted by these people here. From the left,
I'm Mark Lancaster. I'm sort of twiddling the knobs, making sure all the levels are going all right and everything.
I'm Jo Ferrugia. How do I describe myself? Token female?
Yeah, that'll do.
That'll do.
And I'm Mike Burry, the voice of reason.
Oh, I would have gone for token madman, personally. But
yes, the person who likes everything that we hate and hates everything we
foil.
Like.
Foil.
Well, you never know what we come up with this week.
It's almost like he's deliberately being a devil's advocate, isn't it?
Surely not.
So, right, yes, here we are yet again, loyal listener. Maybe. This month, our theme is... Can I say what the theme is? Shall I jump in?
Yeah, go on.
Please.
This theme is...
Host. Go on, host it.
Host the hell out of this. The theme is magic.
You should have had a little sparkle music.
Yeah,
I did actually have...
Did you have a little sparkly
stuff? I've got on my disc, on my stick there, Sabre Dance... You know, Catch a Jury and Cyber Dance.
So why didn't you do that then?
Couldn't be bothered.
All right.
Too much effort. So the theme is magic.
Take 127. The show is too much effort for even the people involved.
There you go.
Hey!
As if by magic.
We're just pussyfooting around because we don't want to talk about any of these films, are we?
Can we just listen to this for a bit? This is brilliant.
You should see the dancing going on in this studio right now, naked.
Mike's like a whirling dervish.
I didn't know you could Russian dance.
So, there we are, Kachaturian Sabre Dance. shall we move on to the first movie that we are going to review?
If we must.
Excellent. Now, this particular movie, I'm struggling to remember. Yes, the summary for this movie will be ably presented by Mr. Mark Lancaster. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Well, yes, the first film was Christopher Nolan's Prestige. I can't remember the exact date it came out, but it's 10 years or so, isn't it? Around about that kind of time.
Yeah, about that.
How to describe this film without actually spoiling the whole thing, and I'm going to attempt to do this. It's quite difficult because there's lots of double bluffs and twists and turns, and you can't really... I think we've got to have a monitoring we can't really reveal, because I know it's an old film as that, but it would spoil the film for people who haven't seen it.
2006.
10 years, there you go. Yeah. Okay, well, it's about two magicians, one called Robert Angier, played by Hugh Jackman, and one called Alfred Borden, played by Christian Bale. And...
That's about all you can safely say, right, isn't it?
It's about honest. The two of them are... The film starts off with them as stooges for a magician called the Magnificent Milton, I believe his name is.
Mm, played by Ricky Jay, by the way.
Is that Ricky? Oh, that was Ricky Jay, was it?
Yeah,
okay.
Fantastic magician himself.
He was magic by his own film.
Yes.
Trivial questionnaire. Mm.
And anyway, they're the stooges in this particular show, and then... During this one particular show, an accident occurs and is a terrible tragedy. And Angier blames Borden as the result of this tragedy. Okay. Then we see them working. Well, the next time we see them, we see Angier doing a magic trick called the Real Transported Man, or the New Transported Man.
No, the Transported Man. Angier one, yes.
It's called The Real One, wasn't it? Or The New.
Yeah.
And what happens in this is not a spoiler because it's right at the beginning of the film. Angier falls in the tank of water during this trick, and Borden is watching him, and he drowns. Then we go to the courtroom, and Borden is in custody because he's been spotted seeing this happen by an engineer, a trick designer called John Cutter, who's played by Michael Caine. And Cutter testifies at the trial of Borden, and Borden is sentenced to death. Later on, we see Borden in prison being visited by an agent of a man called Lord Cadlow, who we don't actually see at that point in the film. And this Lord Cadlow says he will look after Borden's daughter, who will end up in the workhouse, if Borden gives all his secrets for his tricks to Angier. And he also gives him a diary that is from Angier's diary. And then we see flashbacks in the film.
And that all happens within about the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, about the first 10 minutes. Realistically. Yeah.
So it's not a massive spoiler to say that you see one of the characters die. Because also, you can't really believe everything you see in this film, can you?
No. I think that's just about... I mean, I'd actually written more about it, but...
It's hard to explain more about it, actually.
There are other people in it. Obviously, there's an assistant who's quite integral to the plot called Olivia Wenscombe. Brilliantly played by Scarlett Johansson, I think. I think her accent is amazing.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely spot on. I mean, she's really good in it. There's also
Her in it, Jane?
I love Scarlett Johansson.
Uh-huh. Rebecca Hall was also in it. It was very, very good as well, playing... Who is the wife of Borden. And I hadn't seen the film at all until I saw it for this show. And... David Bowie pops up as Nikola Tesla, the inventor, the person who...
Totally forgotten that.
The person who discovers or champions alternate current. So he's a real person in this programme, in this film.
That's a great description of Bowie. Mm. Anyway.
And he was excellent in it. He was very, very good in it.
Go see it.
Go see it. Because I actually...
I love it, but it is... I don't know. I like it, but I like that kind of film. Like,
I do
you know,
too.
That's my kind of movie. But I don't know how many people are like, hey, you know what, let's watch The Prestige tonight, you know.
And that's the thing. It's certainly a challenging movie, isn't it?
Yes.
It's not one that you would sit down to relax to.
Well, I've watched...
I find it quite relaxing. I fell asleep. Every time I'm trying to watch it, I fell asleep. It really did the job.
Yeah. I watched it twice. I watched it last week, and I watched it again this morning, because... there are bits in it you say, is that right? And I'm not sure that the plot is totally holds up.
I don't think you're supposed to dissect the plot too. And I think it's one of those films where you watch it just the first time, I think it's brilliant. And then obviously the more you watch it, like any magic trick, the more you see it, the more holes you see.
Possibly.
Surely.
Possibly,
I think what's most important about this film is a huge... Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale are actually brilliant as opposite as adversaries, and
I think they're
great roles for both of them. I
might dissent that because I think Hugh Jackman is very good in it. I think Christian Bale is not good at all.
No, sir. No, you are wrong. No.
Christian Bale, I think. He's the one who is actually English, and he's the only one who can't do an English accent, isn't it?
I think he
overacts.
Isn't he
hammy?
Isn't he Irish?
Is he Irish?
He's not Irish. He's Welsh.
He's Welsh.
But he's not. He's Welsh only in name.
He's not like a London
accent.
That's
it's kind of a London
anyway.
Cockney accent.
Oh yeah.
And it was. I thought
he was. I thought he was.
Perhaps David Bowie taught him.
I also thought Michael Caine is really, really great in this film.
I love Michael Caine. He
wasn't doing a Jaws 2 performance. He was doing a good...
He was
Jaws 2 in Now You See Me 2, but we'll talk about that
He was later. Doing his Steve Coogan performance.
No, I think he was... Yeah. I mean, I liked it a lot, but there are bits of it I didn't like. I mean, I say Mike has probably got a different view because he always does. But
well, how can we trust your opinion? You weren't even awake.
I was.
Yeah, your opinion
well, the
is
credits,
of no value.
The credits, yeah. Oh, moving on.
I disliked it intensely.
Really?
Oh.
Mm. Go on then.
Oh,
go
good.
On.
We are going to have an argument.
Go on, entertain us.
Well, can I tell you a little story?
Go on then. Please do.
A friend of mine and Dan's actually, wrote a film called Age of Kill. Don't know if you saw it.
Yes, I have seen it.
Yeah, Mark saw it. Yeah, it came out of cinema and Mark Mode absolutely mullered it. And his criticism centred on the fact that the villain, I'll get to the point, this anecdote does get somewhere. Mm. The villain was like, it's a disguised voice on the phone. And Mark Kermode said, yeah, but that's X. It's like, obviously it was X. Now, I think Simon, the guy who wrote it, probably when he wrote in the script, his voice is disguised, probably should have wrote, his voice is disguised so you don't actually know it's a guy that X. Mm. I felt a little bit that with this film. I thought the shadowy man that never talks in the corner of the room in just about every shot, I know who that is.
Well, I agree with you there, Mike, because I knew exactly who it was as well.
And
yes,
when it came to a twisty, turny, yeah, which I'm not going to give away, I thought, sorry, is that the twist? Yeah. I'm not supposed to know that.
It was one of many twists.
Yeah, I don't think that's that kind of revelatory that you knew who that was. I don't think Christopher Nolan, I think if Christopher Nolan didn't want you to know who that was, he would have been a bit clever about it. He's a brilliant filmmaker. I think it perhaps that was a red herring to think you knew what was going on, and actually you didn't.
Hmm.
I did.
Well, there was more twisting, aren't there?
Oh, there
was a bigger twist.
There's a really bigger twist.
And the biggest twist is even sillier.
I know, but it's a film about magicians. Of course it's silly.
A good 20 minutes of science fiction. A bad science fiction there.
Bad science fiction.
Nikola Tesla.
Are you slagging off David Bowie?
No, he's.
I think he is, Joe.
That's a good performance, I thought.
Listeners, if we'll give you mics just in a minute.
That's a good performance, Bowie. I'm not quite sure of his accent, but.
I don't think it was particularly Serbian, but there you go.
Oh, we don't care.
But Tesla's a real guy, real genius.
Yeah.
And they've. Why didn't they just make it some other weird scientist?
Presumably, he was in the book, in the novel.
Well, he was.
Presumably.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, yeah, but that's got nothing to do.
I think you're
that annoyed me. I thought I've got to stand up for Tesla.
I think you're looking too hard at something. I think you're dissecting it too much. When it's a fictional film that's probably, I don't know that you can pick it apart that much. But then again, I guess it's like films about magic and fantasy. If you're not enjoying it, you're going to pick it apart. And if you're just going along with the ride, then
can I just say something? Because I realise I'm in the minority. No. Funnily enough, you know, and I can if. When the listener listens to this, they might think, well, Mike's doing his usual, and there's a certain extent that's true. But I'm going to compare it to another film, The Sixth Sense, right? Mm-hmm. We're allowed to give that spoiler because that's God knows how.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that film.
And we're not reviewing it, right? And I knew that straight away.
I knew it from the trailer.
I didn't know it until the end of the film.
It's another dead all the time film. It's a dead all the time film.
So you know what? You know,
if somebody gets,
I hate to go. You know, remind me never to go to the cinema with you two.
You know who they are? They're those people.
Oh, I knew that. I bet you he's the murderer. Oh, I knew that.
I still love. I love the Sixth Sense. I thought it was brilliant, but I didn't. The actual revelation. I don't think it mattered.
I had no idea. I'd absolutely no idea.
I think I know why you and I had no idea.
Because we're the better
people.
It's
because we are the better people, clearly. But also, when I'm watching a film, I don't switch my brain off, but I'll watch it and I'll let the experience wash over
it's
me.
Immersive.
I'm not sitting there trying to second guess it. Oh, I bet it's him. Well, I bet that. I just don't do it because I think,
I don't
why
normally,
spoil
but,
it for myself?
No, I quite often. But The Sixth Sense is just one time when... I know we talk about Sixth Sense now, but when that trailer came in, when the revelation happened at the end, I thought, well, I guessed that. I knew that.
Didn't ruin it for you. Anyway,
no, it didn't ruin it. Didn't ruin it.
Make your point.
Yes. I thought I'd made mine. Okay, well, I'll do my summation speech.
Go on then.
Shall I?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it suffered from most of Christopher Nolan's films, in my opinion. They're overlong, they're overcomplicated, and they got Michael Caine in.
Oh, how dare you besmirch the name of Sir Michael.
How long is it? Is it over 2 hours?
2 hours and 5 minutes.
It feels much longer.
Now you see me too. It's 2 hours and nine.
Oh yeah, that felt like it.
And we'll get on to that in a minute.
Yes, we will.
Anyway, so I guess it's...
But apart from that, I really enjoyed it.
It's beautiful. It made me cry, that film. I think it's romantic and beautiful. And I love it.
It's amazing. I think this constant struggle between these two both wanting to be number one. One of them who is incredibly technically proficient but a bad showman. The other who is an extraordinary showman but is just doing some fairly hackneyed old tricks.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, they're as bad as each other, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely. I think it's a fantastic movie. It's my favourite Christopher Nolan movie, along with Memento.
Yeah.
I just think they're both amazing. And I had read...
Inception. I love Inception. That's so romantic.
But I had read the book of The Prestige a few years before they made the film.
That's interesting.
And it's very similar. They have taken some liberties with it and introduced a few differences. But
is it good?
It's a fairly faithful adaptation. And it is. It's a good read. And so I was really pleased when I saw the film because I think he did the book enormous justice.
Okay.
Absolutely fantastic. And Mike, you're wrong.
Yeah, as
Joe,
usual.
You're right.
Yeah.
Mark is the producer.
And I will.
I do see your point. Like, I do.
I don't think it's a terrible film. I just don't like it.
Yeah. Okay. And that is allowed.
Of the reasons I've said.
Yeah.
Should we have some music from it?
We should.
Okay. This is Tom York, and this is Analyze.
A self-fulfilling prophecy of endless possibility.
Tom York. What was the name of that song, Mike?
Analyze.
Analyze. Excellent.
The end credits of The Prestige.
Mm. Yeah, I completely forgot.
Fantastic film.
Yes.
With all that twisty, turny, plotty
things.
That's
magic for you.
Absolutely. So, shall we now move on to the next film? I think we should. This is a 2014 film. It's a documentary. And Mike, you're going to talk us through it.
Yeah, well, last month, if anybody listened, I introduced, I don't know what I introduced.
Midnight Run.
And Dan criticised me intensely for just turning up with a little YouTube clip and say, there you go.
Yeah.
So that was quite lazy.
Well, I thought it was
quite clever myself.
I thought it was clever. Playing with this medium, but there you go. So I did some research about this. First of all,
what's it called?
What's it called, Dan? That's a joke. That's a
okay.
It's called An Honest Liar.
An Honest Liar.
An Honest Liar. Oh, clever. So, 2014, I think Dan's already stolen my research by telling him that. It's a crowdfunded documentary. And Dan actually put a couple of pence in, didn't you, Jen?
I did, yeah. I threw a few coppers in, a few crumbs from the table.
Yeah. Directed and produced by Justin Weinstein and Tyler Meestrom. Names that are not familiar to me at all.
No. They've done some work on documentaries.
Are they documentary filmmakers?
They are.
Oh, absolutely. It came together just like a dream team, yes. Then, wasn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, this is why we're on the show.
Well, this film documents the life of magician, escape artist, and skeptical investigator James Randi. Now, don't know if people know James Randi. You've probably seen him on, like, Paul Daniels' magic show and the like.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
No.
He was on Happy Days.
I'd seen him on programmes debunking psychics before.
I've never seen him as well. I had no idea who he was.
A TV series in the UK called James Randi Investigates, which I believe was on Yorkshire Television.
Well, I've never seen
at
that.
Some point in the late 80s, I think.
Anyway, you're taking me off script here.
Sorry,
carry on.
Oh, this ad-libbing just won't do. So he's now a frail man in his mid-80s, but when he was young, he performed some astounding feats. And they were such as freeing himself from the straitjacket while being hung upside down by his ankles over Niagara Falls. Mm-hmm. And that little clip is actually in the film.
Yeah.
It's like amazing.
Yeah, that looks
cool. See, he basically modelled himself on Houdini.
Yeah. Big hero, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he tried to basically not copy his tricks, but learn all his tricks and improve on them where he could.
Yeah.
And he was a fascinating guy. But the film doesn't really dwell on that aspect much. It's really more about after his magical career was pretty much done, and he spent the rest of his life publicly exposing psychics, faith healers, and con artists. Mm. And that's really the heart of the film.
Yeah.
So that's one half of the film. The other half is about his private life and about his relationship with his partner for 25 years, who he discovered is a performance artist, I think, and he's used him as a fake channeler, you know, so, spirit's in me, and all that business. And basically used him, not used him in a bad way, they sort of teamed up to
debunk things.
Yeah. And expose to con the gullible and expose again. A lot of exposing going on. And he got a couple of other unknown magicians to pose as psychics, and they did a really good job of fooling the scientific community.
Those two, actually, going to interject there, Mike.
Yeah.
Those two, that's when I came across James Randi, and I didn't realise it was him when I was watching the film to start with. But when that bit come up, when they said, "This is how we did it," and they went, "We cheated." I saw that. Went at the time.
Oh, right.
Really?
And it was on, I think it was on something like Newsround or something like that. I'd seen it on news or something. Now it's quite nice to be reminded of that, because, you know, I didn't, not knowing it was James Randi who's behind that. And then at the time, you know, when I first started watching the film, it's good.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, that's what the film's about. It's a documentary. It's about what I've said it's about. There's no plot, there's no... Well, there is a twist, actually.
There is a twist.
There is a twist to it, which I don't think I'll reveal.
Because
it is, you know, quite... It's worth getting to the end of the film to find what the twist is without building up. And, I'm not building up some big fake sixth sense type twist.
No. He's actually dead.
Oh, you said you wouldn't say.
No, it is. It's something that occurred during the making of the documentary, during the filming. An event occurred which kind of overtook everything. And if it hadn't have occurred naturally, they might have needed to invent it to kind of,
or perhaps they did
give an ending.
Or perhaps they did invent it. Who knows?
No.
Anyway, so that's about it. I'll tell you, I like the film. It's a bit hard to review, because if it's a documentary, I think it exists really on if you're interested in the subject matter. And I quite like magic, so I was interested. Somebody else who didn't know James Randi and not that interested in psychic investigators and the like probably would just switch off and not.
I think you're terribly, terribly wrong. Yeah. Personally, I think that that James Randi has done enough interesting things in his life that somebody who'd never heard of him would probably enjoy the documentary. When you look at some of the people he exposed, like Peter Popoff,
that was good, that preacher.
I mean, kind of an American Baptist fire and brimstone preacher who encouraged sick people to throw their pills up onto the stage and throw their walking sticks away.
Who was actually an evil con artist?
Yeah, he
was.
Really,
that's all he is.
But there's so many of those still in the world.
But he was so bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Peter Popoff is still in the world, that he still doing operates
it. Well,
today.
Because there's still so many gullible idiots who want to buy things like miracle water.
But it's the thing, isn't it? I think Randi says at one point in the film, people want to believe.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
And you that's can. The thing.
There are, we all know, Uri Geller, there are sceptical people out there who believe that he is a con artist. And, you know, who am I to say if he is or not? But people want to believe that Uri Geller can bend spoons with his mind.
Yeah.
And the fact that James Randi can do it as well and says, look, this is how he does it.
Yeah.
It's not psychic. It's. Yeah. I think actually Uri Geller maybe even believe that he actually can do it too. I don't know.
Well, I thought that
he's made a lot of money out of it.
I guess then the interesting point is, isn't it, when it starts discussing what he's doing is as bad as he's doing a form of con as well. So do you know what I mean? It's puts that narrative. I felt.
Mean when he was a little bit younger?
No, I think that when he was trying to expose the people by tricking people, he's also being a con artist. And, you know, the people involved were then questioning whether they were actually doing the right thing.
Yeah,
they're also lying, they're also being deceitful.
I
thought that was all really interesting.
Yeah, it was.
I actually think personally that it was structurally dropped off a little bit, this documentary, for me. I wasn't sure. I don't know what the point, I don't know what the filmmaker was trying to say. For me, personally, at the end I was like, well, what are you saying? Am I supposed to like him? Am I supposed to not like him? Or is it like with magic, is it a bit, yes, he's a con artist, he's an honest liar. But I was left a bit like, I didn't care.
I actually really liked it, but I agree a bit with what Joe said. I think the end was a bit messy because it sort of
fizzled out
at the end. It was fizzled up, but then they sort of like interviewed Geller and interviewed Popoff, and they're like sort of like, well, you know, I don't think you needed to have them in it because they've been debunked. You know, we don't need their point of view. I'm sorry.
I preferred it. I quite liked him, and I liked all the
stuff. Oh, he's a lovely old man.
Expose,
I think he's great.
Expose, and then I just felt like it was almost like we were being asked to not trust him anymore, not like him. And
I agree.
Hang on a minute. I really liked all, and you know, when he was on that show and everyone was shouting at him when he was trying to show that, I felt like, you know, then you had a great deal of empathy for him, and then it was kind of flip-flopped a little bit, and then I was like, well, hang on, now he's just an old man and it's all a bit sad, and why are you, I'm going to buy some shorts on ASOS, that's what I thought to myself.
I think that at the end of the film it was a bit messy because I was like, are they attacking him now?
I must admit, I watched it when I was very tired and crammed it in, having left everything to the last minute, which I know you guys never do. So
never.
I'm sorry if I missed the clarity of the
end. I don't think there was any clarity, to be honest. What do you think, Dan?
I'm somewhat biased. I've been a big fan of James Randi for a long time. I was fortunate enough in 1999 to see him give a lecture in this country up in London, and I have a book that he signed for me, and he's a fascinating man. They didn't even scratch the surface in the movie, so I'm totally biased. I think he's great. I think the movie was a decent introduction to him. It kind of summed his life up fairly appropriately, but even I have to admit that the tone of it, the structure of it, it did jump around a little unnecessarily. I don't think that's not, you know, always a bad thing sometimes with documentaries, to jump around a bit, but it felt it jumped around unnecessarily, and it didn't build up to anything, and they kind of fumbled that major kind of what should have been a major climactic ending. They should have really made something of it, and it was just like, oh no, there we go, this is what's happened.
But also the direction that it veers off into, there's not really anything to do. It's just, I don't know. I just found it, there could have been a really, there could have been a really interesting, how people were affected by Popov and people more, more of like that, and followed it down that route and see how much, it just seemed to me like almost two different stories.
Yeah.
And I didn't really care about all of that. So, well, that's his, whatever, do you know what I mean? Oh. Whereas all that work he did and what, and how brilliant he was, and that's all the fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know, I felt like it let its subject down.
I suppose what they were trying to do, and it was Adam Savage is one of the people from Mythbusters,
yes,
who was interviewed.
Yeah, and also that, they were really, the filmmakers, they really lost all of my compassion and liking for them when, you know the bit I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
I agree
like,
with you.
And then you just, when he was
why
like,
are you showing
not
it
gonna,
then?
Yeah, why, you know, when he asks them not to do it and they leave it in.
And then this little thing at the end of the film saying, oh,
left me feel, that left
yeah,
me
I agree
feeling.
With that.
It wasn't such, it wasn't like someone who's confessed that they're a paedophile or they've murdered someone. Mm. It's something actually quite personal. Yeah. And I just felt a bit like...
Mind you, did you see the bit at the end when it came up on the screen? As Mark just mentioned, James Randi agreed for all interview
footage. Yeah, I agree with that, Dan. Right, but even
you
so...
You were probably looking at Schultz,
weren't
you?
I think that's when I was buying my crossbody bag.
But
on
even,
eBay or something.
Even so, I think that it felt like... At the end bit, he was pressured into showing
it
that
just
bit
felt,
of film.
I just lost compassion for the filmmaker.
That's the way I felt. It was
anyway,
like,
I probably misunderstood.
Because I had exactly the same thing as Joe. I thought, how dare they? He's asked them not to show it. And then at the end, oh yeah, well, he said all bits of film could be used. But it felt like, it almost felt like he was pressured, maybe.
And also, I just didn't feel it was
vulnerable man. And
he's, I wasn't like, oh wow. I was a bit like, oh, so man, you're
I think having followed James Randi for a couple of decades, so I think he would have been. He would have conversed with them about it and said, no,
okay.
Absolutely use it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the fact
it
that it didn't come across like that in the film is potentially a problem, because certainly that's not the way that you guys viewed it. So I think that is an issue that
about you,
it
Mike?
Does feel like they're, you know, bullying him.
You're very quiet. And that always worries me when Mike's quiet.
I've got no bombshell to, you know.
I think it's quite funny.
I would have preferred more about his magic life.
Yeah, exactly.
To be honest.
That's what I mean. That's the stuff I was enjoying.
Yeah.
The magic and the debunking.
Debunking stuff. Yeah, I agree.
More
I think
debunking.
I could have watched a lot more of the debunking.
Because that was...
Just to say the word debunking is fun, isn't it?
Seeing Popov, or how I didn't know about, but the Geller stuff was like... I love it when...
Yeah, that was good.
I love it when Uri Geller's...
Oh, that
was
so cringy when he was like, no...
I can't do it.
Oh, when he was on the Johnny Carson show.
So cringy.
See, and that is such
he
a
he should have just finished
that,
the match.
All
didn't
that
it?
Stuff was great.
Yeah, such a fantastic sequence. For the listener, that actual sequence is about the fact that Uri Geller, when he was at the height of his fame, appeared on the Johnny Carson show. And he obviously thought to himself, this is it. I'm on Johnny Carson. I'm going to absolutely slay them. I'm going to make it. But Johnny Carson himself was actually a keen amateur magician. They didn't mention it in the film, but he was a keen amateur magician, good friends with James Randi, and they contacted James Randi and said, could you come on the show backstage and make sure that he doesn't cheat?
Yes.
And James Randi, as happens in the sequence, says, no, I can't get there, it's short notice, but do these things, you know, prepare the props in this way so that if his powers are genuine, it will work. But if he's cheating, it won't work. And Geller appeared on Johnny Carson tonight, which was the biggest show in America,
absolutely.
I think. And he absolutely bombed. He couldn't perform a thing.
And yet he's one
totally
of the most
failed.
Famous rich magicians in inverted commas.
Friends
in the
with
world.
Michael Jackson, wasn't he? And
oh, that says a lot.
Yeah,
well, what's interesting, though?
With forks on it.
What's interesting, though, because, you know, he talks about being... He used to call himself a psychic or whatever, didn't he? Mm. And he now calls himself a mysticist.
Mystifier.
Which doesn't mean... Mystifier. Yeah. It doesn't mean anything at all.
Like Mike. I think of Mike as a mystifier.
Yes.
A humidifier.
Well, you missed the best bit of the document. I thought he did the Alice Cooper stage show.
That was good. All of that stuff was great.
He
fun.
Was the executioner, the chap. Yeah. Chopped off Alice Cooper's head. I wanted
stuff.
More of that, to be honest.
All of that. So the thing, I was quite happy to go along with a ride for all that stuff. And then when it got into that, I just didn't care.
Mm.
Because I just felt like, oh, I don't care. the big joke. You know, I didn't see why I was supposed to be outraged.
She don't care. She's harsh.
I mean, was I supposed to be outraged? I just felt sorry for him.
Yeah, I did as well.
I didn't feel like, oh my goodness, what a terrible twist. I felt
this
like,
man hasn't done anything wrong. Yeah. Is what
that's
I thought.
Yeah, yeah. I don't care about.
You're still harsh.
Yeah, I am harsh.
They certainly could have done, I think, they could easily have done a 5-6 hour film or a small TV series.
TV series would be interesting.
He's done so much.
Yeah.
I want to know more about James.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive.
We should get him a show. Yeah.
But I said, I would like to see more of James Randi, having seen the film. Yeah. And I think if the film set out to do that, then it's a success, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay, so we all sound fairly positive about that film, don't we? Which is good, positive-ish, you know, with one or two complaints.
I wouldn't recommend it.
You really wouldn't recommend it?
No.
Why? Because you just...
It wound me up.
Okay. What, just mostly because
It stopped my online shopping. Because I think as a film, it's not... I think it's unrealised and it should be taken away, re-edited and done again.
Oh, right, okay. Interesting.
I don't think it's actually a finished product.
Right. Okay. Ooh.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Maybe that's an interesting because it hasn't had any studio input in it into it, and it was crowdfunded. No, but you know because they haven't had someone overviewing that and actually saying, well, actually, you do need to tweak this a bit. And I don't disagree with what Joe's saying because it is a bit baggy at times. And I think if it was done through a studio, they would actually have that overview and say, you need to tighten that a bit, and they didn't have that. They were given free rein to do what they wanted, really.
It's all your fault, Dan.
Dan's fault.
No, I watched it, don't get me wrong. I am glad I watched it. I just think I couldn't recommend it because it's meh.
Okay, interesting. Well, what I was going to do was once this show was online and on Facebook, I was going to send a link to the filmmakers because they've got a Facebook page for it. I was going to send a link to them to say, we've reviewed your movie on the... I'm not going to do that now.
Well, I would recommend it.
Well, how about instead we put Mike in a straitjacket and chains and hang him over Victoria Station?
Hang him all end of Southend Pier?
Yes!
Or
I'll do it, I'll volunteer. I'll pay
cash money to witness that.
I will watch it again, Dan.
That is good news.
Should we have some music from it?
Shall we?
This is a film. This is a track that was at the end of that film, and it's by the Dramatics, and it's called "What You See Is What You Get."
Magic.
You alright there, Mike? What are you doing?
I just knocked the mic from my Vicks inhaler.
Oh, it's okay. Right.
It is a Vicks inhaler. Oh, it looks a bit like something else. But
yeah, anyway, sorry, yes. Hi, Joe. So, yes, now we come to our final film of the Magic trilogy. And
the best of the bunch.
The best of the bunch, indeed. The one, the only Joe Ferrugia will now give a summary of this movie.
A detailed plot.
My caffeine's worn off now. Feeling decidedly sleepy. You know what? So I've been... So it's really hard to describe the plot of this film because despite having paid quite a lot of money to see it, I've got really no idea.
Were you shopping online in the cinema?
No, yeah. I've got myself a lovely, lovely dress. Net-a-Porter sale is quite something. No. So I guess if you've seen... Now You See Me, then you've got a good idea of what's going to happen in Now You See Me Too. If you haven't seen Now You See Me, I'm sorry, you're going to have to look it up. Anyway, the four horsemen that were involved are the four most famous magicians in the world, and they've been in hiding since pulling off an amazing heist, taking an insurance magnet to task and giving all of his money back to their adoring public. And then they've had to go underground, and they framed Morgan Freeman's character for this. Anyway, they're back. They're back, and now under the cunningly watchful eye of a villain, Daniel Radcliffe, they have been tasked with stealing a microchip that can hack into any computer, and they have to pull off a succession of increasingly ridiculous tricks.
Ridiculous is the word, yes.
I mean, basically the plot is really full of holes, and it's just really a device to get to set piece after set piece showing off like silly magic tricks. And when it works, it really works and you're really in it, but it only works for about 46.5% of the time. And it's quite a good cast. It's really quite a good cast, wasted quite a lot. Ultimately, it feels like it was made because they probably got a tax break from China and the actors wanted to go to Macau, and I don't think anyone really cared about the plot. And it feels it's John Chow who directed Fast and Furious, so the set pieces and the fights are good and fun, but as far as a fully realised plot and story goes, I think it doesn't work. But however, it does have Jesse Eisenberg and Mark Ruffalo and Lizzie Kaplan, who I adore.
She's awful in this film.
I adore Lizzie Kaplan. I won't have a word said against her.
I like Lizzie Kaplan.
And the other guy, I don't know who it was. Anyway, basically...
Oh, discount James Franco.
Who is that guy?
Dave Franco.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you can't afford James...
Dollar Franco.
Get Dave in.
Get Dave in.
So,
wait, Dave?
I mean, come on. Ultimately, and then it looks cheap when it shouldn't. I think, you know, it actually looks like sometimes like a BBC movie, like a TV movie.
Yeah, I agree,
you know,
when I it's, like I mean, Sherlock or something
just,
like that. Yeah,
I know that anything that makes more than $29.99 will automatically be rushed off for a sequel, but this just felt, I felt a bit depressed by the nature of the film business after watching it.
Three and Paul in the Wings.
Yeah, and that's even more depressing that John Chow has already lined up to direct 3 and 4.
And 4.
Already.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, I wasn't expecting very much. I had low expectations because I think the first one was just okay. So,
yes.
But this one, listen, when it works, you do relax into it, and it is fun. And some of the illusion stuff is really good fun, but it's trying to be too clever and too tricky of a script that just simply doesn't add up to that.
Yeah,
that's a good synopsis. Yeah. Good summary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah, but I completely agree with that. So, what should we do now?
Well, I've got a couple of things. So you talked about the cast, and I think Jesse Eisenberg.
Do you? Well, you didn't like him in Superman versus Batman.
Not that I don't dislike him. I find his mannered acting sometimes not great to me. But I think in this, he's actually quite good because he tones that sort of nervous tick to stuff down a bit. Dave Franco's all right. I think Woody Harrelson wears a great hat in this film.
Oh, we must talk about the twins.
Yeah, we will talk about that in a minute. I think...
who was that?
From the original film... Isla Fisher was one of the horsemen. She is gone, probably because she looked at the script and thought, I ain't going to be in that.
Yeah, well, I think she was going to say, oh, Sacha Baron Cohen has earned $25 million this year.
I don't
year.
Need to I'm do that, yeah. that. So, but anyway, so they have Lizzie Kaplan, and I like Lizzie Kaplan. She's great in that thing with Michael Sheen on Netflix.
She was also in True Blood. She was in Mean Girls.
She's really, really good. But I think her character in this, or her portrayal of the character, is some of the quirkiness. I think she misses the boat completely, and I think after 30 seconds I just wanted to punch her in the face.
I think the script is definitely
not served well.
When I say I'm the token female,
but that's actually alluded to quite a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, but I don't care if it's that's like almost pastiche of a pastiche. It's almost if we make enough jokes, no one will notice that she hasn't really got a role.
They call it meta, don't they?
Yes. Oh, there we are. You
see, the thing is, meta. Yes, she was technically the token female, and the role was very jokey, but But at the same time, I think she was also the most fun thing about the movie. Whenever she was on screen, I was like, oh, okay, this is fun. She will say a couple of funny lines. Mm. And that was the only time
it's
I had any fun
though,
during
it. A lot of times when it was being filmed, I was like, this feels like a rehearsal. Like, some of the stuff they do, like, it just felt so clunky.
Yeah,
but like a film where, well, obviously had some money. I know, you know, obviously they shot him, like I said, they shot him Macau for a reason. It probably wasn't a huge budget. But it just felt... It felt like a student film sometimes. I was just a bit like, guys.
See, I'm of the opinion that the thing that was desperately wrong with this film was the directing. Because you've, you know,
and the
well, I don't know. The script was written by the same guy that wrote the first one. And I think that with the right director, what they may have done is they may have challenged one or two points about the script and said, hang on, that doesn't make a huge amount of sense. Let's rework that. And they would have made what they did have work much better. But I think this guy threw away so many opportunities for big dramatic reveals and exciting. But can I give you one example? When they are on the roof of a building in America during the daytime, and they jump into, you know, those rubbish chutes that go off the edge of a building. They jump into one of those and they slide through it and they come out of the bottom and land in a laundry basket. And it's a laundry basket in a kitchen of a restaurant, and some people shout at them. So then they wander into the restaurant and some more people shout at them. And then gradually we find out after 2 or 3 minutes that they're now in China and it's nighttime. And by the time you find that out, the momentum of that moment is totally gone and you don't care. Mm. They should have jumped in the top in the daytime, whoosh, 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 straight out onto a mattress on the street in China. Pitch, but you know, dark, and that would have been like, wow, what the hell's going on here? But there were so many things like that I think were just thrown away, and he totally misjudged them. And
but also, I think the script was trying to be funny, and it just wasn't really very clever or funny. Some of the jokes were just cringy. I mean, the only funny joke was about how the old boys that do magic don't get sex in high school. There's something about that.
I thought Daniel Radcliffe is not a villain, is he?
I don't know what the hell Daniel Radcliffe and Michael Caine were doing in this film.
Well,
I guess they wanted to go to Macau.
I think Michael Caine was in it because he was in the last one.
I think it was his Jaws 2 movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. But, I mean, I don't think his performance was bad. It was just not a good film. But Daniel Radcliffe is Harry Potter. And no matter how much he tries, the poor lad.
No, I disagree, actually. I think he's done plenty of films where he comes across brilliantly. But also, I think he was... I don't know. Is it because they cast him because he was a wizard? That it's supposed to be like,
possibly.
Now you're in a magic film.
Possibly.
I just thought it was rubbish. I just thought, like, it was embarrassing. And, what was he wearing? Anyway, sorry.
He was okay, wasn't he?
You can't wear a beard very well, can you?
Do you know the best bits?
I don't know.
The best bits for me. It is an okay film. In my opinion, it was okay. It weren't bad. It weren't good. It was okay. I quite enjoyed. 2 hours went by fairly... You know, without event, I must say. And after, but I did look at my watch and I thought, God, there's an hour left.
Yeah, I did that as well. Yeah,
but then there was something that happened that I thought, oh, this is good. And there's one little really good sequence about the heist scene and they're passing cards back and forth. It cost about £2.80 by the look of it. And I thought that's a terrific sequence.
Kind of. But I mean, they're just doing that. I was like, well, you've got all of these security guards, these people, and all you're doing is turning your hand around. I thought they could have done that better.
There was a review in Empire magazine which was not glowing by Chris Hewitt, and he actually said, he said the sequence is quite good, but they are the world's worst security guards.
Yeah.
There's like completely anybody could fall with those idiots because they just like go turn the hand.
I just thought that was ludicrous. Yeah. Like, oh no, it's gone.
Oh yeah, but I think you're misunderstanding ludicrous for being bad. I mean, I think it reached a ludicrous point, which then tipped over into being good.
Oh well, I don't disagree. I enjoyed that sequence immensely. I must admit,
it's fun. Yeah.
The best bits, and there weren't that many, there were more boring bits than best bits, but the best bits reminded me of Mission Impossible.
Yes, I agree.
But not the Tom Cruise Mission Impossible.
The original.
Cheesy TV show. Yeah. But I'm saying that as a good thing. I'm actually saying, and especially, I'm not going to give it away because it's still at the cinema, but the ending... was such Martin Landau.
You're absolutely right.
And they all walk away. So, I mean,
so who's going to mention the dual roles of Woody Harrelson then.
Oh god.
I mean, he's the real character, fine, but he's twin evil brother.
I actually like his portrayal of the twin. I thought was really funny. Listen, I love Woody Harrelson. I watch him do anything, but I mean, whose idea was that? That's like something from
probably Woody Harrelson's idea.
I thought maybe it was going to be that they were one person. I don't know.
I thought clearly what's going to happen here is that later on in the film, Woody Harrelson is going to put on a wig and a beard and pretend to be his twin brother. That's why they've introduced the idea of a twin brother.
But I thought
and then they didn't bother.
I didn't know what the point of the twin brother was.
I thought at some stage he was going to be, would have swapped, and they would have, say, kidnapped him and he'd been in the opposing camp or something. I thought that was going to happen. Yeah. But they didn't do that either. So
I didn't know there was much plot point, actually.
There's quite a few scenes where they kind of, the clever people in the audience like us, we're thinking, I know where this is going. Mm. So, like at one scene, we're going to have to practice our card skills, except one character's not that good. And you think, I know, he's going to have to be really good at the end. And they didn't do that. There's quite a few things they build up to and then kind of forgot about.
So the script had been
written by lots of people, different versions, and things had kind of got missed somewhere.
And its constant desire to make you believe, lead you up a blind alley, I think ends up tripping itself up in the end. I don't really understand what happened in the end.
I must admit, I don't either.
I guess we'll find out in 3 and 4.
Without giving it away, the MacGuffin, which is like what they're all after, what everything is, I'm not at all sure what it was or who had it or why they had it or what you're going to do.
That's what I mean, that annoyed me, because I thought if it had been a really clever reveal at the end, I probably would have forgiven it everything.
Yeah. I thought,
and then actually I just sat there and thought, oh God, I haven't been on ASOS. I've been sitting here watching this. I don't understand. And also I thought that's lazy writing.
Yeah, it's like,
because I should understand.
Well, yeah, I did actually get an email about that. What happened then?
I actually rewatched the first one.
You did?
Again. Because I'd seen it about, I don't know, about a year or so ago. And then I rewatched it. I actually bought it off of Amazon on digital thing. Anyway, I can watch it. But I think it's quite a good film. And, you know, there are problems with it because it's not great. It's just okay. But there are some very clever little sequences in that film. So
it's a bit bigger, that film, isn't it?
Doesn't it
feel a bit bigger?
Yeah, I don't know.
There's two big shows, aren't there, in that one, maybe?
And I think, I don't know, there was something about it that was, they seemed to be more involved as actors in it. I think you're right.
Sometimes they looked a bit embarrassed, those actors, to be in it.
Just like, and I think, I think Lizzie Caplan was badly served. She toned, by the end of the film, that quirkiness, which had obviously been given as direction to her, had dialed down and she was fine. But early on, it was like, when she first got there, she's doing all these like jokes and it's like tumbleweeds going across. Is this meant to be a joke? And as I felt about the nice guys, I had that same feeling. It's like, am I the only person here who's not laughing? And then, but nobody else was, even the cinema. So, and I saw it with about 12 other people, I think. Mm. But so, you know.
No, I can't say I laughed once.
A lot of people in the cinema laughed at something that no one was supposed to laugh at. Everyone was like, what? It was like a really heartfelt moment. Everyone was like,
yeah, there's a couple of smirks and one laugh, but I can't remember what, but there was some little joke that aside, and it was quite funny. But
I thought there was an in-joke, possibly, that I thought, when Mark Ruffalo wrapped himself in a green cloak, and I thought, oh, is that a Hulk reference here?
I don't know, but that's nodding off probably.
And look, that stuff is, I mean, Mark Ruffalo can do no wrong in my eyes. He's absolutely wonderful. But what the hell is that ridiculous, stupid, schmaltzy storyline about? About what it's all up for revenge?
That's nonsense.
Is it true that Mark Ruffalo is doing a reboot of Columbo? Or have I dreamt
that? Oh, well, no, that has been in the pipeline for ages.
Is it?
It would be a good one.
He would be excellent.
Yeah, it would be a good one.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, very confusing and
can we watch something good
ultimately
next time, please?
Quite pointless movie.
Yes.
Yeah. So we don't recommend it.
No, we don't. Well, actually, we should.
Maybe
do.
We do. We that's the magic. Tune in to see part 3. Well,
if the Odeon
don't believe everything you hear.
If the Odeon had bought my ticket, I would have recommended it. But as he didn't, and I had to pay.
Yeah, £10.25.
Well, £4.95 in Basildon.
I say, I didn't hate it as much as I hated Nice Guys. I didn't hate it
I definitely didn't hate it. That would take just, too much emotion.
Are we going to let him just toss an ice? Because that's a terrific film. The Ice Guys is terrific.
No, yeah, that was really good.
Toss that awful. Into the mix.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah,
how
don't
can you
put
even
that
compare?
In the same sentence as Now You See Me Too.
Exactly.
I mean, yes. Come on, dude.
One of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. Honestly.
The man's insane. Anyway. Right, okay, so shall we do a little sum up here? The films. Show of hands, and then I will tell you, the listener, what they're
doing.
You're
going to count, are you?
Show of hands, Prestige, yay or nay? Yes.
Yes.
Lots of reservations, but it's a yes.
So that's a yes. Yes, that's a
it's
three,
a yes with reservations.
That was three and a half votes. An honest liar, yes or no?
Yeah, I'll go yes, actually.
Yeah, yeah, a yes and a half, two and a half yeses, three and a half yeses.
That's the same then.
Although, it's going to be closer to three, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's closer to three yeses. And Now You See Me Too, yay or nay?
Half.
Yeah.
Just that's actually just a single half.
I might actually stand outside the cinema and tell people not to see it. No,
yeah.
It's not that bad.
It's just meh.
There's far worse out there.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to give it a half. So no. There's no shame.
No.
Yeah.
So we've got two halves. That's
he had to pay £2 as well, didn't he?
So Now You See Me Too, don't bother. It's pony. An honest liar, don't listen to them. It's excellent.
Yeah. And Dan's an investor.
And I want my money back.
We are not biased on Take 127.
I think the vote seems to be with the Prestige, doesn't it? The Prestige, folks.
Christopher Nolan will be thrilled.
Absolutely thrilled.
He needs all the help he can get.
If the listener agrees with me, please write on the Facebook page saying,
yes, we do have a Facebook page, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
Yes,
we do.
Look us up on Facebook.
Does anyone actually...
Anyway, you have been listening to the Take 127 movie show on Ship Full of Bombs, sfob.co.uk.
And the podcast will be available as soon as straight after the show is finished. On if you look for Podbean and then Ship Full of Bombs on that, and then you'll be able to get it.
Fantastic. Right. Cheerio then, everyone.
Okay, we're going to...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
We're going to finish with Pharrell Williams' Freedom, which was in that film. I don't remember it being in it, but it must have been.
It was his... Yeah, of course it was.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway.
Hooray. Have fun.
See you soon.
Yeah. See you in a month.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold on to me, don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? Your first name is free, last name is dumb. But you still believe in where we're from.